Welcome back to the Villain Edit. I'm trying to mix it up, make it more exciting. I am Monty Ashley.
I'm Ryan Hall.
We watched some television this week.
A little bit. Not as much as usual.
There was no two-hour soul-sucking block of The Bachelorette to see, I think because of the NBA Finals.
I am perfectly happy with that. It's the only time I've ever been in favor of the NBA Finals,
because
I am not a sports person.
Take that, sports. Raya says thumbs down. I kind of turned into like a NASCAR, more like a funny car announcer right there.
Okay.
That's the kind of the vocal quality of you'll only use the edge.
So that's how I feel about sports. Thumbs down.
How do you feel about werewolves?
Thumbs up. I love me some werewolves.
Well, we'll talk about those more when we get to Face Off. But be ready for our new segment, Rias's Werewolf Opinions.
I do have opinions on werewolves.
But first, RuPaul's Drag Race got to the top four.
We were at the top four when we started the show.
And
we were told someone would be eliminated.
And then they weren't.
It was a big old lie.
But I was okay with that. I thought everybody did really well this
Yeah, week. I'm very happy with the top four.
Once again, that's Sasha, Peppermint, Trinity, and Shay. Various last names may or may not apply.
The runway theme look was eleganza, extravaganza.
That doesn't mean anything.
But I expected more.
More extravaganza or more eleganza or both?
A little of both.
How would you define those words?
Fabulous!
Okay. Without reference to other words that just refer to each other.
Can
you have eleganza without extravaganza?
I think you can just have plain eleganza, like in the in that fancy ball scene in movies where they're always having the fancy balls. Those are very eleganza.
Okay. And can you have extravaganza in ways other than eleganza?
I believe so.
Do you have an example?
I believe that, well, anything rococo.
Mm.
Pretty much.
Rocky Rococo?
Mad King Ludwig.
Okay.
His was extravaganza that had passed over eleganza and gone straight into more extravaganza.
He probably did have balls, though. I mean, dances.
Yes, he did. Those were very eleganza.
So you have notes on the runway looks.
The final four runway dresses. First off, I like Peppermint, and she has had great outfits in the past. But I was thinking for your final runway look, you would want something amazing. And what I got was something that looked like it was made out of flame-retardant Halloween fabric.
Now, it says here that she called her look ultimate 18th century luxuriousness. And I take it you disagree with that characterization?
Well, it had a hoop skirt.
All right, well, that's luxurious. It means you take up more space. Luxury cars are big. This all tracks.
But when you wear a hoop skirt, a lot of people don't know this because you probably in your daily lives don't wear that many hoop skirts. You're supposed to wear another garment over it, between it and the dress, called a petticoat. If you don't do that, then what's going to show up are the hoops. And you can see the hoops through the fabric, and it looks like crap. And I felt that Peppermint maybe didn't know this because you could absolutely see, especially the bottom hoop on the dress. And I felt like it was kind of a failure for that. And I didn't like that her gold trim looked like gold iron-on. The whole thing gave me those Dracula capes you used to buy in the 70s that were made out of some kind of plastic.
The ones where you could clearly see the fold marks after you took them out of the plastic packaging?
Forever, right? Yes. Dracula may not be eternal, but those folds in the cape absolutely were.
So you're saying that when you're wearing a hoop skirt, you don't actually want people to think hoop. They want to think, oh, that parfait has a lady's head sticking out the top of it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Showing the hoops on a hoop skirt is like having a visible panty line.
Now,
it's just not done.
Peppermint did, on the other hand, do really well on the challenge, which was to sing or rap a few lines in the middle of RuPaul's latest club hit.
Oh, just because I didn't like her dress does not mean I do not like Peppermint. No. She's amazing, and her rapping was great.
She also, at the final lip sync, where RuPaul just has all four lip sync, the best lip syncer.
Yes.
You can really tell. a lot of the queens who do lip sync will do good dance moves and mouth the words. Peppermint is delivering the song. She is
giving... you get emotion with that. It's not dancing and mouthing the words. She's providing meaning.
Yeah, she's a really good lip syncer. It's a shame we didn't get to see more of it. That's one of the basic flaws of this show, is that whoever's really good, you don't get to see them lip sync. You always see the losers lip sync. And I would be fine if someone wanted to remaster the season, get rid of like Charlie Hyde's performance and just kind of green screen Peppermint in, and we'll see what happens.
That would be fine, yeah. Do that for the DVD release. I would love that.
Yeah.
Next up, Sasha wore a dress for the Eleganza Extravaganza. And I've seen this dress before because it often shows up in the formal wear section of your local Goodwill. It's that straight down long sleeve dress with all of the sequins on it that clearly says, "I am a mother of the bride." And it was hot pink. I don't usually see them in hot pink. They're usually some other color. And I have to say this, and I apologize for the profanity, but goddamn, Sasha made that dress look good. It was so amazing.
She was also wearing the crown, not the exact crown from her first look, but what is clearly the Sasha Velour crown.
Signature crown in matching pink felt.
It's basically a Jughead hat.
Kind of a Jughead hat, but it looked amazing on her, and she looked amazing in it, and no one else could do that with that dress. I'm just saying. I've tried that dress on. It has not worked.
For her performance, we were led to believe that she and Todrick Hall didn't get along for the space of one sentence, and then she delivered her thing great.
Right. They were like, she's like, "I don't dance. Oh, no." And then when they actually did the performance, it turns out she was fine.
She crawled up onto the stage, and her lines was things about let monsters reign. She sang about bending the rules.
Her verse of the song brought tears to my eyes. It was so great. She didn't really sing or rap it, which I think was a good choice. It was kind of a spoken word, growly Vincent Price in Thriller kind of delivery. But I loved it, and I loved the lyrics, and it was adorable.
And she also, this was the first time we've seen her lip sync, because she's so good, she's never been in the bottom. And she was great. I would really like to see more of her lip sync. She also performed the song, and just like Peppermint, seemed to be really enjoying it.
Yeah. What do we got? Next up was Shea Coulee. Shea wore, I know you'll be shocked by this, a bodysuit type thing and some tall boots. The bodysuit had a hard chest plate that was like a Queen Elizabeth I vibe for me.
Yeah, it was like straight on, it looked like a bustier, and then when you got to the side, you realized it was flat on front.
Yeah.
But what she'd done was she'd glued the front of a bra to the bustier and then put the bra on.
So that every time she took a step, her boobs moved.
They moved.
Which was good, but they...
distractingly and entertainingly, which I think is totally fine for a drag queen.
Yeah, they were hilarious. They did not move naturally, but they were... I could not stop looking at them and laughing. And you want that in a performance.
They sort of approximated the look of a bustier that's holding up breasts and somebody walks. Like Yvette in Clue. Her breasts bounce distractingly, I will say. And in this case, for a second you think that's what's happening. And you go, wait.
That's not what's happening.
What's going on there?
I loved it. I thought it was great. I thought the outfit was a little predictable because it was the same, you know, bodysuit, tall boots. But I also really liked it. And I do really like Shay.
Yeah. I like Shay. I don't have a lot to say about her. Like, this, my note on her singing performance was Shay also kills it.
Yeah.
She did great.
Right. She was great. She did a great job. Let's see. Trinity Taylor busted out a look that reminded me of Thierry Mugler's mermaid dress, which, if you do not know what that is, you should look it up, because, oh my god, it is incredibly bizarre.
How do you spell it?
Mermaid.
Thank you.
Thierry Mugler is spelled Thierry Mugler.
Thank you.
And you do know how to spell mermaid and dress. I'm just being a jerk. But she looked great. She was wearing a wig sideways, so it stuck out in all odd directions.
It had a silent movie feel that I was totally into.
Yeah, and her makeup was glorious. Trinity is not my favorite, but I will give her credit for this. She killed with that look.
Yeah.
It was great.
This was when she came out. My thought was, oh, right. They kept saying she was a pageant queen. Her final runway look, as she must have planned from the beginning, was great.
It was amazing, and I'm really glad I got to see it.
And in fact, I also thought that, so they also did some runway shtick where they had to talk to pictures of their own young selves, and it was very tear-filled and heartfelt.
And tear-filled.
And also everyone had to say, why should you be the winner? And you get things like Peppermint calling back to Stonewall and being there for inclusiveness.
Right, because Peppermint is a trans woman, and Stonewall was led by trans women of color, even though they don't get much credit for it. And I would like to see her win for that reason. I think that's an important statement to make.
Yeah. But Sasha's answer was that she wants to push drag in new, weird directions. And then she said, the new thing is definitely going to walk in with a scream, and that is me. And that's a reference to, remember when Sasha entered on episode one, she just shrieked instead of doing
it. Yeah, she just stood there screaming instead of saying hello, which I thought was charming.
It was so great, and I am convinced when she did that, she was planning this line.
Yeah.
That.
And also, I would love Sasha to win because she is a weirdo, but I feel like we've already had weirdos win.
Yeah,
And maybe it's time for someone who's, I don't know, I want Sasha to win. That's all I have to say.
Sasha is my favorite, but it is true that when she talks about, we should have a weird winner, well, we got Sharon Needles.
Yeah, Sharon Needles is a weirdo. A weirdo in a different way, a less arty weirdo, I think, but
yeah.
Nonetheless.
Well, Jinx, if you want arty, Jinx is pretty arty.
I don't know. She did some traditional drag queen stuff. I've seen her do arty things in real life.
Drama school kid.
Aw, there's nothing wrong with drama school kids.
It's true.
They're the best.
Everybody lip-synced, and they all did great, and nobody got eliminated, which I was fine with.
Yeah.
So we have a top four.
We do, and I cannot wait to see who takes the crown.
Well, you're going to, because this week is the reunion, where we see who has the sense to accept mockery for whatever dumb things they did, and who is dumb enough to complain
about it. Yep.
Remember, this is your chance to fix your reputation and solidify your career.
Yes. The reunion show is a chance to improve your brand.
If you come out and say, well, I didn't lip sync because lip syncing is beneath me. Well,
so much for your brand.
Yep.
Or if you come out and say, I was just kicked off the show because I'm old. That is not going to fly. That's just going to make you look old and whiny, Charlie Hyde. So think about what you say.
Yep. So, before we get into one of the deeper shows, there was a new Forged in Fire.
There was. Was it a redemption
is what they call it.
Okay.
So it's four guys who all got eliminated in round one, which can be bad. The last time they had one of these, I kind of felt like all four of those guys could have been eliminated round one again. Like, if you're taking all the people that did the worst, it's not...
It did have one of my favorite quotes, which was, that sword's good for chopping orcs.
Yeah. That was Morgan, who... They were given their usual task.
Design a knife that can complete these tasks in your... Signature style.
And he's like, well, I want two big curves on it, and it did look more elfy than choppy.
Yeah, it was nice looking. I thought it was great looking. But I think they wanted something more that you would use to butcher a pig.
Yeah.
Than something that you would use to give as a gift to Galadriel.
So I did like this. What they were given this time was jackhammers. Just each person gets a portable jackhammer. And so use the metal out of this. Everyone's first thought, including ours, was, well, we're going to use the bit. The bit comes off. It's a big chunk of presumably hard metal. It's already pretty much billet-shaped. But instead of everybody just doing that, one guy tested the metal. I wasn't sure what he was doing, but apparently lots of sparks means it's hardened steel.
Right. So he was testing the metal on a wheel to make sure it was actually usable steel, while two of the other guys were teamed up taking the rest of the
jackhammer
apart to see if there was any good metal inside of it, I thought was really cool. Yeah.
Now, it turns out there wasn't any good metal inside of it, because obviously we use the hardest part for the part that bonks up concrete, but I really liked, first of all, the teamwork, and second, that they were all willing to just say, let's just take 10 minutes and see if there is better metal.
Yeah, I like that too. I always enjoy teamwork on shows, especially on competition shows.
Now, that Morgan was having trouble hardening the steel, and Jason Knight, who is back instead of Jay Nielsen, they're just flipping back and forth
between those guys.
Jason's theory was that it actually is getting hard, just not as hard as the file. And that Morgan should have just been happy with as hard as he could get it. But as happens, Morgan went home because it was too curvy and silly. I was very concerned about the guy James. He's the guy who originally went home in round one for that time he tapped his knife on the anvil and it shattered.
To see if it was hard and it shattered. I didn't even know that could happen with metal.
Before I watched this show, I thought steel was hard. Now I understand unless steel is made exactly correctly,
it can be brittle.
Incredibly
brittle.
It's
too hard, and it can be too soft. It's a metallurgical miracle.
Yes. So James says, I don't file test my blades. He just trusts that. We've seen heat treating. It doesn't work.
No, sometimes you have to heat treat a blade a whole bunch of times before you can file test it. A file test is where you run a file down the blade, and if it glides smoothly over the metal, the metal that you're gliding the file over is harder than the file.
Yeah, if it's soft, then the file will bite into the metal.
Right.
I have a lot of respect for those guys like 8,000 years ago or whatever who figured all this out.
Yeah, I'm thinking about swords made in ye olde medieval times, and how did they ever get a usable weapon, considering how much trouble they have with these modern forges?
Yeah, it's
amazing to me.
They didn't have these gas-powered forges, they didn't have the power hammer.
No.
They may not even had oil to quench in, I'm not sure, but... So, Morgan went home, then... They were told your handle has to be bone, horn, or antler, which not everybody knows how to handle. And what happened was that Earl didn't sharpen his knife.
No.
Not. And Jason said, it's just not sharp. It's just not sharp enough.
Oh, like it wasn't sharp.
Now, Earl was a guy I was glad to see get another chance because he was the one who went home because he didn't know how to operate a manual coal forge.
Yeah, and come on.
Which,
I don't know how to operate a manual coal forge.
Well, you're not ready for the show then. Get on.
I guess I'm not.
So that left us with James and Eric. They were told to make a thing called a sword breaker.
A sword breaker. That's like a sword with little notches in the blade that when someone hits your sword, okay, you hold it up when someone's swinging a sword at you, and their sword gets stuck in one of the notches, and then you twist your sword to disarm them or bend their sword.
Yeah, it looked like it was about, 16 inches long, and kind of looked like a comb.
Yeah, it was like a comb with little,
The space between the teeth was shaped like a spade, so...
So that it would have more areas in which to grab a sword.
Yeah.
It's hard to describe.
Yeah, it looked bogus. Their example of it being used was in one specific Sword Art Online game where it's used by one person, but they swore it was part of a standard Renaissance.
I haven't looked into it, but I know that all the swords in video games are especially realistic.
Well, to be fair, the audience for those usually does care about realism, except that Sword Art Online is anime, and anime nerds do not care about realism.
They do not.
To the point where people who do anime costumes can't even fit into the dealer's room at the convention. They have to stay outside in the lobby.
Oh, yeah, because their sword won't fit in the room. It's really sad.
There was some confusion. The pommel had to have a ring on it as a guard, but the... contestants put it on different sides because you have to hold this thing in your left hand, and the comb has to be facing out.
Right, and so some people made right-handed blades, because...
Now, what decided this was that Eric decided that the spaces between his teeth, instead of spades, were going to be clubs.
Right.
But the way it was supposed to be is the stem of the spade goes in and then it widens out for the spade.
Right, but he did little triangle thingies, which just let the sword slip back out.
Yeah, so they do the challenge that the sword breaker holds a rapier and then gets yanked back, and the rapier just flopped right out. And you can't break a sword that way, my dude, so James won. And for the first time, I noticed the technical difference where the losers surrender their blades to the judges. The winner presents his blade to the judges. Either way, you don't get to go home with your sword.
Either way, you don't get to keep your dumb sword.
That was Forge and Fire. It was fun, but it was not wildly interesting.
I did watch an episode of Forged in Fire Deeper Cuts to see what that was.
Okay, so this is an example of the way they repurpose reality shows with 2 to 5 extra minutes stuck in.
Right, so that they can take out a commercial. A lot of times they'll do shows, like a reality show, they'll have like Naked and Afraid Revealed or something.
It's called Naked and Afraid Uncensored.
Uncensored. It's not uncensored. But the thing about Naked and Afraid Uncensored is that they just have a little crawl across the bottom of the screen that says, John was bitten by mosquitoes over 300 times on his penis during this scene. So they just it's like a pop-up.
And that was during Forged in Fire?
No.
They have got to clean this forge up.
No, that's how it works on Naked and Afraid, is they just give you little pop-up video information. Forged in Fire, I expected to do something like that, where they'd say, this blade is the wrong color to go into the... But it didn't. What Forged in Fire does is they give you a little, maybe 1 minute or 30 second spot at the end of the show where they explain something.
I like things being explained.
The one I watched... I know, honey. The one I watched, they were explaining how sword etching works. That you put on clay, or you put on, a lot of people use nail polish. You dip the sword in acid, the metal that's not covered by the nail polish changes color, and then you remove the nail polish and you have a design. So they just spent a minute explaining what sword etching is and how you do it.
Cool. That sounds like fun.
Yeah, but I had to sit through an entire episode of Forged in Fire that I had seen before, waiting for something to happen.
Well, that'll happen sometimes.
Yeah.
All right. So, Ink Master. Before we talk about Ink Master, I just watched all of, and Ryze watched about a season and a half of, the show Burning Love.
Yes.
Which is a parody. The first two episodes are a parody of The Bachelor and then The Bachelorette. Then I think the third season's a parody of Bachelor in Paradise.
Yeah, something like that.
And it's made basically by people from the state, with some Rob Hubel mixed in.
Yeah,
and you got Paul Scheer. It's
very comedic.
It's that comedic group.
I really liked it, but I had never seen The Bachelor before. So now that I've watched The Bachelor and I'm kind of rewatching Burning Love, it all makes sense. It all comes together, and it is terrifying.
So the reason I bring that up is in season 3... it's more like a game show, and Michael Ian Black is a perfect smarmy game show host, and he is constantly delivering the rules and then saying, now here's the twist.
Yes.
And I bring that up because this episode of Ink Master, now here's the twist.
Yes, they are doing that a lot, and it's kind of annoying.
So, as you would expect, they're sending home... All right, as you remember, it's a team season.
We haven't talked about episode 1 yet.
Yeah, we did.
Did we? Okay,
yes.
Well, it's a team season.
Teams of 2.
Each team represents a specific tattoo shop.
Right. So, when a team goes home, those 2 people go home.
And here's the twist.
A new team is brought into the competition. But here's the twist. That's right, another one. This team contains a veteran from a previous episode or a previous season of Ink Master.
Right. And then their quick fire challenge is something, or then the challenge that's the first challenge that this team does is something that focuses on the reason they got eliminated in the first place.
So that seems like it means all those teams whose names we didn't bother learning in the first episode are probably going to shuttle off anyway.
Yeah, but I don't under... But so, no, so usually at the end of a show, you go from 15 contestants down to the top two or three. But they're just bringing in new contestants every week, and I do not know how this is going to work, and how do you choose a winner from that?
Maybe it never ends.
Oh my God.
Maybe they're just like, new plan, we just keep doing this forever.
That makes sense.
Well, eventually they run out of previous contestants.
Yeah, but they just start the cycle again with people who were contestants on this season.
Oh, boy.
Oh, yeah, it's a wormhole of tattooing.
So now it's rookie shops versus returning veterans. And also, here's the twist.
Another twist?
This is the jury of your peers. It's not a twist. They didn't do it last week, but they are doing it from now on.
I prefer the jury of your peers over the jury of the flesh canvases.
Yeah, the human canvas jury is mean.
And it's terrible, because you get a tattoo you like, and then you just sit around listening to people tell you how awful it is.
But I think I went on about this last week. The jury of your peers doesn't do anything.
No,
because
they just complain.
Let's say the judges have their bottom two. So the jury of your peers can either pick another team and say, we think you should send this person home instead, at which point the judges say, no, we already know who the bottom two are. Or the jury of your peers picks one of the same teams that's already in the bottom. So you didn't do anything. And that's exactly what happens in this episode.
That was a dog sneeze. Please disregard.
A dog sneezed, yes. All right, so the flash challenge was make a big picture with Post-it notes.
And they all did.
Yeah, most of them were fine.
Yeah, there was one that I really liked of a shark. I think they won.
No, the giant tiger won. But that was largely, I suspect, because it was the new team coming in, and we had to make everybody angry at them. So they won the flash challenge, and that meant they could assign all of the skulls? Is that what they're called?
Yeah, they assign the human canvas to the artist if they win the flash challenge.
And that's everyone's excuse to get mad, because although there is a limited number of canvases and artists... That was also a dog. Because there is a limited number of canvases and artists, somebody's going to get every bad canvas. When somebody comes out and says, I want a snake on a motorcycle jumping through a ring of fire that's in the eye of a skull.
And I want it on my testicles.
I'm going to have to put the explicit tag on this episode with all this penis and testicle
talk. Sorry.
Whoever gets assigned that will be furious. But somebody's got to be assigned it.
Yeah.
And also everyone says, oh, they'll be able to target everyone. You can't target everyone. If anything, giving this power to the team that just entered the competition means they haven't picked out enemies yet. They don't know what everyone's weakness
is. Yeah, so they're just, so...
They pick the one they want and then it's kind of handed out randomly. And then because it's Ink Master, we have a segment of people just... furious that they're going to have to do a difficult tattoo.
Everybody on this show is awful.
They're so angry about
everything.
I mean,
Dave Navarro seems kind of nice.
Wouldn't you want to go to a tattoo artist you like?
Yeah, I would not. If I went into a tattoo shop and the tattoo artists were just complaining about how shitty each other's art is, I would not go back to that shop. I would not let them etch anything into my skin. I want things to be etched into my skin by people who like their work.
I feel like on Drag Race, everybody understands that you're there mostly to win, but also to establish yourself with a lucrative career for the rest of your life.
Right. You make it on Drag Race, you're going to be able to book more shows, you're going to be able to get a better agent.
You can go on the tour if you do well enough. You can go to your hometown, wherever that is, and host the Drag Race viewing party.
Yeah. You're set for a while if you build your band correctly. But the people on Ink Master, they're doing the opposite. They're making me not ever want to get a tattoo from any of them. Even if they're a great artist, I don't want to get a tattoo from someone who's a terrible human being.
And none of them are putting any thought to... what how they are making their business appear on this television show.
No.
It's just baffling to me how bad they are at...
It's like, yeah, it's just like a big clash of egos.
And some, because it's a team season, we're also getting some of that within teams, as the Tri-Cities team is already arguing about which person's tattoo they which person's design they should use. And
oh, that team they're from Atlanta, I think.
Yeah.
And they are
angry and contemptuous of everything, including each other.
Yeah, and you should not be contemptuous of each other when you're on the same team.
And
or when you're not on the same team, really. Come on, let's be nice.
And if you've been in the bottom weeks one and two, you don't get to talk smack at anyone.
No.
But they continually do. So the challenge this week was illustrative black work, which is not something I think they've done before.
They have, but they called it something else.
Okay.
When they did the challenge where you have to do that logo.
Yeah.
For whatever that drink is that, yeah.
Sure. We don't have to remember. They're not paying us.
Right. Well, they had to do a logo from an alcoholic beverage, and it is a absolute black and white line art logo, and they had to match perfectly to the photo.
Yeah.
And that's their black and white line art challenge. Normally, this time they added a twist. You don't have to do that.
Here's the twist. People came in and asked for any sort of nonsense. Like one guy said, a black horn demonic goat head with a crescent moon, roses, and a raven on my ribs. But the tattooers were told only lines of different lengths and widths. All black, no color, no shading. And this is a good challenge because Oliver Peck cares a lot about consistent line weight.
He does. That's his thing.
That's the thing I never notice about a tattoo, but once he's describing it and they zoom in.
And you're like, oh, I see exactly what he means. Those line weights aren't the same.
Yeah.
Now, if you were a person just looking at the tattoo on a person, it would look like a fine tattoo. I felt like most of the tattoos, except for one this episode, were things that the people who got them would be happy with.
Yeah. And again, they had to tag team in 1 hour increments, which I don't think leads to good tattoos.
No.
So, everybody came out and did their thing. Everybody got very angry about the new guys, Old Town Ink, because they were using a thing called a mag.
A mag is like a... Well, it's like a series of... It's like four tattoo needles strapped together.
You know those chalk things they use for drawing music staffs?
They don't use chalkboards anymore, but you know what we mean. It's like a thing that holds four tattoo needles in a row so that they're all... Five tattoo needles in a row so that they are all making straight parallel lines.
Well, they only make straight parallel lines if you make it make straight parallel lines. Like,
well,
they're going to be parallel, but it's up to you to make them straight and to make all five of them hit with the same intensity.
Okay.
Which I think is not necessarily that easy. However, everybody was furious that they used a mag.
Oh my god, they're cheating. We have to draw our lines one by one. They get to draw five lines in a row with one tool.
And Old Town's response was, well, you should have thought of using a mag. Which, as far as they were concerned, settled it. Then, comes down to the judging. They have a great-looking tattoo.
Yeah, their tattoo was gorgeous. It was...
They get told their tattoo looks great. The judges notice that a lot of people are rolling their eyes. Although, sidebar, on Ink Master, the judging is largely made up of reaction shots of people not being judged, rolling their eyes and scoffing.
It is true. It's filmed in scoffoscope.
I'm pretty sure that those are all just pickup shots they do at the beginning. So, all right. Team one, give us angry, give us disbelief, give us angry, disbelief, no bigger, bigger, and then they just go down the line.
I was hoping they were telling them really stupid jokes and then they'd get the eye rolls from that.
Because to judge by this show, no tattoo artist thinks anything anyone else has ever done is any good.
No, all tattoos are horrible except mine.
But in this case, the judges notice the scoffing, say, what's going on? And the people in the back say, They used a mag. And Chris Nunez says, well, that's a good idea. But
yeah. Too bad you guys didn't think of it. You could have all used mags.
Oliver Peck says, well, that's fine. Dave Navarro says, I'm pretty sure these guys aren't going home.
Yeah. But guess who the jury of your peers sends down?
Now, the jury of your peers has two good choices. There's Allegory Arts. No. There's Tri-Cities. They did an octopus.
Now, their octopus looked like an illustration from a 1970s era comic book. And I don't think that was necessarily a bad thing. It was okay.
The main problem with it is that there was non-octopus stuff that kind of blended in with the octopus because the line weights weren't varied enough. They can probably fix that just by putting some shading on it.
Right, exactly. It was some coral. Honestly, if the person that gets the tattoo isn't happy with it, he can go have some light coloring put on it. It'll be great.
The other one was the Marked Society, and they did a tiger that was terrible.
Okay, well, first off, their person wanted a tattoo of a tiger caught by its toe. As in, catch a tiger by its toe. I'm not going to go into the connotations of that.
The history of that rhyme,
you mean? The history of that rhyme, it wasn't always tiger.
They did specifically say tiger, though.
Yes, she did specifically say tiger, and she didn't seem like the type that would know that there is a racist history behind that. So, whatever. Well,
you got Jeremy Clarkson in trouble a couple years ago.
Yeah.
But the tiger, the legs were attached randomly, seemed to be missing joints.
Yeah, that tiger had some anatomical problems, like its shoulders. I'm not sure it had shoulders. I think maybe the legs just attached directly to the spine, which was all bent in a weird way. The tail was oddly foreshortened. The head was too big.
And in the wrong spot.
One of the fangs they had accidentally colored in.
Yeah, because they were cross-hatching to make...
to make the mouth look deeper, and they just cross-hatched one of the fangs out, so it was a one-fanged tiger.
And, you know, they were using cross-hatching
only to... had six stripes.
The stripes were my problem, is that they used cross-hatching to make the stripes dark. And that's not really what cross-hatching is for.
Yeah, but they had to use single lines, so that's what they went with.
Well, to my knowledge, tiger stripes aren't black.
Yeah, they are.
They're white.
We're not going to talk about the tiger stripes issue.
All
right. Right now, about what color tiger stripes are.
Anyway, the tiger was much worse. One of the judges correctly said the body looked more like a lizard.
Yeah, yeah.
We shouldn't have been even able to see the tiger's face, should we? Because we were looking down at the back for about everything else.
Yeah, I don't even know why we were able to see the tiger's face. And then there was a rope tied around one of its toes in an unfortunate noose formation.
So, although Tri-Cities is the team I personally am sick of the most, Mark Society was the other worst tattoo.
Oh, they were terrible.
So, the jury of your peers discusses those two and then decide, we're going to send Old Town because we're still mad about that mag thing. Nunez and Peck both spent time explaining, that's stupid, you wasted your time, we're obviously not sending this team home. Dave Navarro didn't even engage with it. It was just, are we done? Okay, just don't do anything stupid, and we'll just talk to the bottom team. And this is what I keep saying about the jury problem, is if the judges don't already think it's one of the bottom tattoos,
What's the point of even having this jury? What is it doing?
The other option was that the jury picks one of the other two teams, and that's who goes.
And it's such, and everyone on the show is so contentious that no one's ever actually going to pick a team because they think the tattoo is bad. They're just going to pick people who annoy them.
So I will say it is a lot easier to get octopus anatomy right.
I thought it was a fine looking octopus tattoo. If I had to have one of the bottom two tattoos on me, I would definitely go with the octopus.
And the judges sent home the Marked Society for that lousy tiger, which was correct.
Yeah.
And now we're going to get some other team coming in, and that's kind of a mess. The two teams that are high drama right now are Tri-Cities and Allegory Arts. Allegory Arts is Beardo and Blondie, and they fight with each other a lot.
Yeah, but they're always hugging and kissing.
Yeah, but I think they're going
to be... They're more grumpy than mean.
Now, switching from people who hate each other to people who like each other, I like you.
Oh, I like you too.
And also, Face Off!
Eee!
Whole new season.
Yep.
This season, there are two teams.
Right, and they're kind of doing the same thing that Ink Master is doing, where it's each team represents a shop, although they're a fictional shop.
It's a little like Ink Master did a couple seasons ago with Team Nunez versus Team Peck,
which
did not
like
pay
that.
Off at all. Except in this case, the judges and mentor don't have any favorites.
No, so you have two teams because when you're working in special effects, you're usually working with a team of like five people on a project.
Yeah,
so they felt it was more reflective of the actual work environment.
There are 12 people, six per team. I did write down things about all of them. I'm probably not going to read them all out here.
All right.
Although I'm always worried when people's experience is they own a rubber mask company. Or they have a haunt.
The guy from the rubber mask company I have seen before because there was a... there's this TV show about the arts that we sometimes called The Art Of.
Right.
And they did a segment on a rubber mask company and that guy was on it. And I enjoyed him and I thought, that guy can really sculpt.
There is a wide range of experience this time out. There's a guy named Al who's worked on over 200 movies and TV shows and... His only goal is, I want my own shop. And on the other hand, there's like Jill, who has taken classes, but is a retail manager and wants to quit her day job.
Right.
So they get split up into two teams, and they name themselves Ethereal Effects and Twisted Six.
Now, in a show where people are getting sent home regularly, maybe you don't want the number of team members in your name.
Because, just jumping ahead to a spoiler... As soon as next week, they're going to say, we are Twisted Six. There's five of us.
Yeah.
It's
kind of adorable that they didn't think ahead.
Yeah.
But so, I worry that it may show an inability to plan things.
And each week, they have to select a four-person, or four-man, or four-woman.
Right.
And that's the person who's going to be in charge. This time it was Al, who's the guy with over 200 movies, and Andrew, the guy with the mask company.
Guys, you know Al. Al is that guy that you see hanging around. He's got white hair. He's got the khaki Bermuda shorts and the Hawaiian shirt.
Yeah.
That's Al. Great guy. But you know exactly the kind of guy he is by looking at how he's dressed.
Yep.
Which is fine. I like Dal.
Now, the challenge was werewolves.
Werewolves, you say?
Specifically, Mackenzie Westmore always likes to bring up two or three specific examples. In this case, it was Underworld, where, I'm sorry to correct you, Mackenzie, those are lichens.
Yeah, those are not werewolves, they're called lichens.
A different and trademarked concept. And True Blood, and those are werewolves.
Yeah, but they just... I don't remember any half-man, half-beast werewolves in True Blood. I just remember them using some wolf actors. In fact, some of those wolf actors show up later.
Didn't that werepanther get some action in panther form?
Yeah, I think maybe. But still, it was a panther form. It wasn't half-human, half... Yeah. It was just... They just turned into a panther.
Yeah, of course, traditionally, werewolves... is a human turning into a wolf. A giant wolf, probably, but just a wolf. Now, Ryus, I believe earlier we teased Ryus's werewolf opinions.
I have some opinions about werewolves.
Like what?
Okay, well, I really like the werewolves in Dog Soldiers. They're big, they're made out of rubber, as God intended. They got those creepy long legs, and they've got... rubber masky faces, but I really like them. They're my favorite werewolves. Some of my least favorite werewolves are going to be the werewolves in The Howling.
That's a controversial opinion, because as I understand it, people really like The Howling.
I really like The Howling. I just think that the werewolves in it are poorly designed. They have giant rabbity ears. They're clearly covered with fake fur. They're just not good. And then when the nice lady gets turned into a werewolf during the newscast to prove that werewolves are real, and she turns into some kind of a well-groomed little show dog. Oh, please. Please. I hate that. I hate it so much. And yet I love The Howling. And even more so, I love Howling 3, The Marsupials.
Now, what do they turn into there? They're were-dingoes or something?
Something like that.
And how do they look?
I don't remember. I just remember that they have pouches.
Okay. I will say the werewolves I have been least happy with lately are the werewolves in, I think, the last Twilight movie, which are just terrible looking.
They're like big CGI huskies.
Bad, bad CGI, and they didn't move right.
They did not move right. They're completely fake animals. They didn't, no, they're just, like, they're wrong.
Like, I know, Twilight, but whatever. Most of Twilight is fine for what it's doing. But those werewolves were not.
Now, in the British version of the TV show Being Human, they had a guy that was a werewolf, and the transformation sequence they did for him was amazing. It was great special effects work, and I absolutely loved it.
Now, I will say that all of these people, like, most of them went to the Tom Savini school.
Yay, Tom Savini!
I assume there's a class where they just show the transformation scene from American Werewolf in London on a loop, and say,
watch this for a few hours and let me know when you figured it out.
This is what werewolves look like as of this date.
Well, the transformation sequence is really good in that, but I always felt like the final werewolf was too much of a bear.
Mm.
Was more modeled on a bear aesthetic than a wolf aesthetic. But I am really picky about werewolves.
And that's going to pay off when you talk about this episode.
What is the challenge on this episode?
We already said it's werewolves.
Yes, each team has to make a pack with three members. The Alpha, who is the strong leader, the Beta, who is second in command, and the Omega, who is the little whiny wolf that is at the bottom of the pecking order.
So, two things. First of all, that doesn't actually represent what happens with wolves. Whatever.
Not really.
It's what happens in werewolf movies.
Sure.
Second, you notice the Beta is the second in command, right? It's the Omega that everybody dumps on. Idiots on the internet, get your terminology right. If you're calling someone a Beta, they're second in command.
And that's what you're chosen to yell at idiots on the internet about. Well, good job.
They could at least get their pseudoscience insults correct.
I agree.
So, handlers brought out some wolves, and they were very cute wolves.
Oh, they were lovely. And they were wolves that I am sure were used on True Blood.
Yeah.
The black wolf was particularly, he has a gray muzzle, and he's very familiar looking to me.
Andrew picked that one to be their inspiration, and Al picked the white one to be his team's inspiration. And I like that a lot, because there was a gray one, but if one person picks something on one side, you should go to the other way.
Yeah, there was a white wolf, a black wolf, and kind of a brownie wolf, who I liked. But he seemed the friendliest of the wolves.
They all seemed pretty friendly and not ravening monsters.
They were not ravening monsters. They seemed, the white one had its tail between its legs and seemed really unhappy for a bit. But
yeah.
Anyway, whatever. They're wolves. Yeah. What are you going to do?
So, they molded stuff. There was mold drama right away. By right away, I mean,
I think.
Yeah, one team was having trouble opening their mold and cracked it a little, and they had to fix it with glue really quick because they were going home.
The first drama I noticed,
yes,
was the lady that was making the chess piece and had no idea how to do it because she had never done one before.
Yeah.
And they just kind of gave her a mannequin and some clay and said, get to it, and then,
yeah, that was Laura. She was the one with green hair who currently works as a cake decorator.
Yeah.
Which you would laugh, but a cake decorator won this show a few seasons ago.
Yeah, yeah. It can be done that a cake decorator can win the show.
That's true. She didn't really have a plan. She didn't like doing chess pieces and had never done one, but she's a team player.
And Al was the captain of her team, and as was pointed out later, he should have been watching over her and giving her some assistance. Yeah. The chess plate itself, so when it was done, it was too small for the model.
It was just ribs straight across. It was without just a xiphoid process.
Yeah, there wasn't really a xiphoid process. There were just some ribs.
And it
didn't look good.
It was for their Omega, I think. And they were going to make their Omega their biggest model, but make him gaunt.
Yeah.
And he turned out to be a huge muscular dude.
Yeah, he was like some kind of bodybuilder, and you're not going to make this guy gaunt. So there's like, nothing you can do.
They put the ribs over his enormous bulging pectoral muscles, and they really should have thrown that model, that sculpt away.
Yeah, they should have just painted him up. Just done some airbrushing on his body to make it look like he had ribs.
One mistake people make on this show is they concentrate on the sculpting to the exclusion of everything else.
Right.
Like, if anyone ever puts out a face without prosthetics on it, they feel like they have to apologize, even if it's painted perfectly.
Right.
And a lot of times you just need a really good paint job. This is movie magic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There are times when you don't have to sculpt
everything. But in this case, each team of six was making three looks, so they were like, all right, well, one person's going to do a huge cowl, and another person's going to do a face. And
One person's going to do this, they're going to do a big back piece with a spine sticking out of it.
And everybody wants to do a big thing, and I don't know.
It didn't all work out. There was, okay, the guy that made the mask was on the team Black Wolf, and he made a Black Wolf mask, and it looked great if you're looking for a rubber Halloween werewolf mask.
Yeah, the judges liked it. I didn't.
I thought it was okay, but it was very clearly a rubber Halloween werewolf mask.
Yeah.
Although I've seen plenty of movies where rubber Halloween werewolf masks were used.
Yes. Usually in shadow or quick cuts, if they're smart.
Yeah.
This is ethereal effects we're talking about. I also did not much like their beta. It was kind of lumpy and asymmetrical.
Was that supposed to be the lady?
Yeah. Had a weird expression.
It had a little, yeah, first off, it had a very short snout and a little black nose. So it looked more like a rodent.
Yeah, which is fine if you go with it. Like, I personally enjoy the kangaroo people of Tank Girl.
But they spent a long time working on the chest piece for that, which had six large bosoms.
Yes, they felt they were, oh, it's a little late to start saying bosoms on this episode. they were very pleased with their plan to do six breasts, but only on the female character. The guys only had two nipples.
Because, come on, let's not be crazy here.
And then their Omega, he was the one with an one-strap overall and was holding a jug.
Yeah, he was. I liked him. He was kind of a redneck, not even a redneck, like an Appalachian hillbilly werewolf. Yeah. And I enjoyed him a lot.
You did not like his spiny ridge.
I did not like his back, which had a big ridge. Giant spines ridge on it, which I didn't feel was necessary. If maybe they had glued hair along it to help to disguise part of it, it might have worked. I didn't like it, but I liked him because he had a personality. You could look at him and you'd be like, oh yeah, that guy.
Yeah. I didn't think there was enough hair on any of these things.
Yeah, nobody really did any good hair work. And I feel like that, if you're doing a werewolf, should have some hair on.
Yeah, that's how you make someone wolfier. That's how they made Jack Nicholson wolfier.
Yeah, but instead they just kind of painted him up and...
Yeah. Now, switching over to Twisted Six, their alpha had a face that looked like Silly Putty.
Yeah, their paint job was weird. It was a light pink flesh color with a little bit of hair attached to it. Was their alpha the one with the bunny ears?
I don't remember.
They had one with bunny ears,
yeah.
And I did not care for it. Especially if you're going to do a white and pink paint job, it's not going to come out looking like a wolf.
Their beta, I couldn't really... It kind of had a rabbit-like muzzle, and the judges liked it, but I could never see what the chin looked like, because it was always in dark shadow.
Yeah.
And their Omega...
Oh, it was the worst. It had a head that was shaped like a half-deflated soccer ball. Its ears didn't stand up. The head was too big for the body.
I liked it, and I'll tell you why. Nightmare Before Christmas, the guy with the axe in his head that goes, Bunny!
It did kind of look like that guy.
I liked the expression of their Omega. Nobody else did at all, including the people that made it. And unlike Ink Master, these artists know who's done well, who's done bad, and they don't spend a lot of time shouting at each other.
No, they don't, which I appreciate it.
I will say Jill is the woman with the retail manager job. She dressed up the most for the judging.
Okay.
She had a nice big ruffly neck thing that I approved of.
Yeah, she was kind of a goth look. I liked it.
I like when people dress up. I don't dress up myself, but I appreciate it in other people.
I'm so glad that you have said that. Otherwise, our relationship would be doomed.
Yes, we went to Goth Day at Disneyland. There's a picture of it that was officially taken, and Rias is looking resplendent in goth couture, and I'm wearing a hoodie. I do have a back pin.
And it's not even a black hoodie. I was so ashamed.
I knew you were ashamed of me.
That's not why I'm ashamed of you, sweetheart.
So, Ethereal Effects wins. A guy named Joseph was the individual winner for doing the Omega's face and hair. My notes about Joseph are, fell in love with special effects from the movie Stargate.
Oh yeah, he's a little young. That's okay. The makeup effects in Stargate are amazing. That Anubis armor?
Yeah.
We saw it at the Science Fiction Museum here in Seattle, and it is fancy.
And the person that goes home, they threw around the idea of sending Al home because he's supposed to be experienced and didn't lead his team very well, but they sent Laura home.
Because she couldn't sculpt a chest plate.
And they felt that she should have told someone, I'm not good at this, I can do these other things, put me on that.
True.
It is bad for me that she went home, because she was one of the only people I could identify rapidly.
Oh, because she had that very pretty green hair. Yeah.
Unusually for Face Off, we only had one contestant with brightly colored novelty hair.
Yeah, they need to get to work on that before the next episode.
And it was Laura, but she was sent home. So now the Twisted Six are down to five. Nice going, guys.
Are they going to change their name? Are they going to be the Feral Five?
I think they should have to change their name, but just to Twisted Five. Like, every time they should have to say out loud their shame.
I agree, because come on, guys. You chose the number of your team and put it in your name when you know people are being eliminated. Yeah. What is wrong with you? What?
And that runs us out of episodes of shows we watched. There is a new season of So You Think You Can Dance. I have not watched the audition episode.
The audition episodes are rough.
Yeah. Like, they're theoretically useful for learning the storylines of the people that will eventually actually be dancing.
But you get a lot of bad dancers that they put in there because they think it's funny. And I think it's kind of mean to do that.
And if anyone does end up as a finalist, they show their packages, over and over again.
Yeah.
And frankly, I want to enjoy this season, so I'm holding off as long as possible on account of Mary Murphy is back.
Hmm.
And she is a very knowledgeable judge on ballroom and a shrieking catchphrase idiot on every other topic.
Her shrieking and catchphrasing, just, I cannot stand it.
It's so neat when there's a ballroom person, though, because she, like, turns off that part of her brain and will give incredibly detailed and helpful critiques that help me, an uneducated fool with a television set, understand why that tango was better than that tango. And then out comes someone
who's on the hot tamale train.
Oh, boy. So, I'm kind of delaying until we get to the actual contestants for that.
Yeah, I don't like the audition shows. I don't want to be involved in a hang-in with Hung situation.
Yep.
Ugh.
But I will probably fast-forward through the audition show in case there's somebody amazing. But that'll happen next week, and we are out of time this week.
Thank you for listening to us.
Yes, thank you.
We really appreciate it.
We do, actually. Thank you for listening. Okay, bye.
Bye.